This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it's War of Will coming down to the 16th pole in front. In front by 2 lengths late. A late charge from Longshot Everfast in the inside two, but nothing stood in his way. War of Will won the Preakness.
Bricks and Mortar pumps with March to the Yard. Nonetheless, closing in with 2.5 lengths to make up at a 16th to go. It's Curb On in front, Clyde's Image. Bricks and Mortar finding stride late in the game. And Bricks and Mortar's up in time.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Leora and Channing Hill on the outside of Serengeti Empress, who digs in toward the rail. It's these two, Ladyapolis Third, the others with plenty of work to do. It's down to these two in Serengeti Empress, who's holding off the challenge of Leora as they come down to the line. Serengeti Empress has taken the Kentucky Oaks.
And Vino Rosso edging away from Gift Box. He's coming into his own. And Vino Rosso at age 4 goes on to win the Gold Cup at Santa Anita.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good morning once again, everyone. Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment here in the month of June. Happy to have you with us on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And happy to have you with us, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. Baron of the Backstretch, Mike Penna, Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, our producer, Lee Della Pina, and looking forward to the next couple of hours post-Triple Crown here in 2019. That's right, another Triple Crown season in the books. No Triple Crown winner this year. Matter of fact, we didn't have a horse win 2 legs. We had different winners of all three, and that made it somewhat interesting into itself. JT, last weekend we were at Belmont. Got a chance to broadcast the Belmont Stakes, and Sir Winston for Mark Cassie getting the victory there. Mark Cassie is en fuego right now. He wins 2 legs of the Triple Crown, does it with 2 different horses.
Yeah, he was the guy that that won 2 legs.
right.
So, yeah, congratulations to Tracy Farmer for winning that race as well. Farmer's put a lot of money in this game, and it was nice to see him win the Belmont Stakes.
Yeah, it was great. You know, somebody, who was it that sent out a tweet? There was a tweet out there. Oh, Seth Merrow from Capital OTB sent out a tweet saying that if you go back and include the Canadian Triple Crown races, and you look at the results of those races, and then you look at the results of what happened here in the United States this year, Mark Cassie has won 4 of the last 5 North American Triple Crown races.
Wow.
Think about that, because yeah, he won the Queen's Plate, and then he won, what's the race at Fort Erie? It's the
Prince of Wales.
Prince of Wales, right, with Nipawa.
W-A-L-E-S.
Yeah, he won that race with Nipawa, right? So right. Now he takes those two and then misses on the Derby, which may, a lot of people think he should have won the Derby too.
Yeah. Does that mean Safi Joseph and Bob Baffert, they've won 3 Triple Crowns between them?
Is that what it is? Yeah, because Safi won the Barbados Triple Crown, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, so, correct.
It's odd to lump international racing with North American racing and Canadian racing with U.S. racing, but yes, that's the
case. I thought that was an interesting tweet. You know, just thinking about the success that Mark has had, and look, Mark Cassie nominated for the Hall of Fame the past couple of years, unable to get in. I think with these two victories, it's a no brainer now. I think he has to get in.
Yeah, well, it's inevitable, but you know, you don't count it till it's on the board.
Yeah,
until your plaque is up.
I guess those are some of the things missing. You know, and I do have a vote in the Hall of Fame voting. Those were a couple of the things. Really, the one thing missing from Mark's resume was that he didn't have a Triple Crown victory. And you can say, okay, well, how pertinent is that if you're going to vote somebody into the Hall of Fame? Because the rest of his accolades are certainly very deserving of being in the Hall of Fame. But I said, okay, this is the one thing missing. Now he has it. He has 2, as a matter of fact. So
Bobby Frankel never won a Triple Crown race.
Yeah.
He's been in the Hall of Fame a long time.
Yeah, so think about that.
I don't think it's necessary, but I don't know how people view a body of work. And, you know, it's funny, too, because a lot of guys get in the Hall of Fame before they retire or whatever. It might be better to just wait till later, although it's nice to be in the Hall of Fame when you're still alive.
I think so.
Or young enough to enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know? But I don't know. The current system is fine. I just think, you know, from year to year, and bet to bet, you know, people feel differently about how certain trainers are around. So I think Mark will get in sooner or later, and probably sooner now.
Yeah, I would say he's in next year.
Yeah,
when he comes up on the ballot again.
Because I voted in that too, but I don't know where he fell in the overall scheme of votes. I don't know if he was like on the edge. Do they give us that stuff? I don't remember getting it.
I don't know. I don't think they do.
Yeah,
I don't think I've seen that.
He must have been relatively close, I would think.
Oh, I would think so.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
I would think so. So now we turn our attention to the road to the Breeders' Cup. And for all of you who are wondering, we are just 139 days, 5 hours and 31 minutes away from the Breeders' Cup World Championships, November 1st and 2nd, potentially at Santa Anita in Arcadia, California. That is where it is currently scheduled to be held. But with the issues that are going on at Santa Anita, you have to wonder if the Breeders' Cup doesn't make a move and shift things someplace else.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. But
what do you think if you had to bet right now?
If I had to bet right now, I would probably take a flyer on Keeneland.
So you think they shift it to Keeneland?
That's what I think.
But you don't think it stays at Santa Anita?
I don't think it does. That's my gut.
See, I don't either. I don't think they can. So,
well, I they can do whatever they want, but I don't think it's in the Breeders' Cup's best interest to keep it at Santa Anita.
Yeah, and when I say I don't think they can, what I mean by that is, yes, they can keep it there if they would like to, but if anything would go wrong and something catastrophic would happen during one of those races, I'm not sure racing recovers from that.
Well, racing is going to recover no matter what.
You know what? I don't know if they would.
I don't understand why people say, you know, oh, racing, they're going to eliminate horse racing. They're not going to eliminate horse racing. I mean, what happened at Santa Anita was
and it's still happening.
The racetrack's open anywhere. It could happen.
Yeah, correct.
So,
but not at that alarming rate.
Well, the big part of the rate happened in the bad weather. You know, there was a mismanagement of the racetrack in the bad weather, but you can't. It's still a very small sample in the overall scheme of things, you know.
And one is too many.
Well, absolutely,
one is too many. We both agree on that. But my take on it is that if they were to run there and something were to happen, that you know the outcry from people outside of horse racing and even within the industry, I think you're going to get some of that from within the industry. That look. You know, they're going to say, well, they just went there knowing that this situation was happening and
they
didn't care. They ignored everything, all the warning signs. Ignored it all.
That's why the Breeders' Cup is in a bad place.
Yeah, I don't think that. Well, I think the only move they can make from here is to move it someplace else.
Yeah, which is probably what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's all speculation at this point.
Yeah, we know nothing as of now. There's Dora Delgado from the Breeders' Cup was with us last week. At the very end of the interview, she said, you'll be hearing something coming out soon. So I know they're talking about it. They're thinking about it. But as of now, we just don't know where it's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, 139 days away from the Breeders' Cup, and we'll be there as your exclusive radio home. Also going to be at the Queen's Plate. We were talking about the Canadian Triple Crown. We'll be there in a couple of weeks. Looking forward to getting back to Woodbine. And then tonight, you're heading over to Churchill Downs. You and Tom Leach, the voice of the UK Wildcats, will be together above the finish line at Churchill Downs to have coverage of what is an outstanding card at Churchill Downs. The Grade 2 Stephen Foster, the Grade 2 Fleur de Lis, both winning your ends for the Breeders' Cup races. Both of those races part of a card that has 5 graded stakes on it tonight.
Yes, the original Tons of Fun team back in action. And it's always fun working with Tom. He's a great guy. We've worked Kentucky Derbies together and had a good time. So I'm looking forward to that.
Sirius XM 156 is where you can hear the coverage tonight. You can listen anywhere in the world on your Sirius XM connected devices. And, of course, you can listen worldwide with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. Coverage comes up 8 to 10 Eastern time, and it's all presented by our friends at Breeders' Cup. So make sure you're tuned into that as well. All right, coming up here over the next 2 hours, we're going to, well, we'll talk about the Stephen Foster. We're going to talk with Ed DeRosa, who is with Briss and Twin Spires. He is also the host or co-host of our BrissNet.com call-in show every Thursday night here on the network. We're going to talk to Ed about those races and some of the horses he thinks can get to the winner's circle tonight. That comes up in just about 5 minutes from right now. Al Stahl Jr., who saddles Tom's d'Etat, one of the contenders in tonight's Stephen Foster, he'll be with us at 8:35 Eastern time. And then in hour two, we're going to shift gears, and we're going to focus on a couple of issues that have been prevalent in the sport of thoroughbred racing, and of course, not the Santa Anita issue that we just referenced, but we're going to focus on the situation in Illinois, where a gambling bill is waiting to be signed by the governor, which would certainly benefit the industry in the state of Illinois. David McCaffrey, the executive director of the Illinois Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, will be with us at 9 Eastern, and then at 9:30 Eastern, Eric Hamelbeck, the CEO of the National HPPA, will be in studio with us, and he is just returning from Washington, where he was up there talking with different legislators about the industry. So we'll get an update from him coming up at 9:30.
Well, that'll be good. I'm very interested in the Illinois situation. That is probably going to save racing if they get it done.
Yeah, yeah. I would think that it would go a long way toward making things better in that state. For sure. All right, we're going to go ahead and get to our first break. We will come back. We're going to visit with Ed DeRosa next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, and it's all presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Woodbine is now racing 4 days a week, every Wednesday night, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And racing is back on the turf, as the E.P. Taylor Turf Course, home to the longest stretch in North America, is now available, along with the new 7-furlong inner turf course set to open in mid-June. Premium racing days this month include the Grade 2 Connaught Cup, June 1st, the Woodbine Oaks and Queens Plate Trial, June 8th, and the Queens Plate Festival, June 28th and 29th. Visit Woodbine.com today.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you, with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Alternation, sire of Serengeti Empress, winner of this year's Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks.
Serengeti Empress, who's holding off the challenge of Leora as they come down to the line. Serengeti Empress has taken the Kentucky Oaks.
Alternation is one of four third crop Kentucky sires to produce a Grade 1 stakes winner. And from his first two crops, his runners have earned nearly $4.5 million with 9 black type horses and 5 black type winners. Alternation, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Spendthrift Farm introduces its newest breeding program for 2019, the Safe Bet Program. Breed to a fourth-year stallion and watch his first crop of two-year-olds have measurable success on the racetrack in 2019, or you won't owe the stud fee when your foal is born. To learn more about the Safe Bet Program, visit spendthriftfarm.com/safebet or call the farm today. That's spendthriftfarm.com/safebet. Spendthrift, the breeder's farm.
Celebrate Dad this Sunday, June 16th at Laurel Park. It's the first annual Cars, Cigars, and Barbecue, the ultimate Dad's Day Out. Enjoy a day of heart-pounding thoroughbred racing, cigar rolling, yard games, barbecue, and a car display featuring hot rods from all decades. Admission is free for the whole family, so come celebrate Father's Day at Laurel Park. Doors open at 11 a.m. First post is 1:10 p.m. Visit Facebook.com/Laurel Park for details.
Hi, this is Joel Rosario, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network. You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And Elate is sent to the front. Sneaky Betty's trying to go with the champion. Next in line, moving up on the outside. Here comes Teresa Z, putting in her run. Followed by Mopetism on Bridal Mode. Doesn't seem to have it today as they turn for home with Elate to catch, running a big one off the layoff. Sneaky Betty bidding for the upset, and Teresa Z toward the inside. They went the mile in 36 and 4. They really picked it up there, and Elate begins to pour it on. It's Elate drawing away. Sneaky Betty, Teresa Z battling for second and third, but it's going to be Elate. Billy Mott wins his third Del Cap. Jose Ortiz on board. Sneaky Betty a game second. Teresa Z third. Photo for fourth. Maybe Furiously Kissed over on Bridal Mo. It's tight.
Elate with a victory in the Grade 2 Delaware Handicap. Believe it or not, that was last July, and that was the last time that Elate found the winner's circle. She is 0 for 3 since that winning effort, but that not deterring the morning line odds makers at Churchill Downs, as she is the 8-5 morning line favorite in tonight's Grade 2 Florida Lee, which is a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Distaff Division. She's going to try to get back on track for trainer Bill Mott under Jose Ortiz when she goes to the post later tonight. And again, our coverage coming up on SiriusXM 156. You will hear the Florida Lee and the Stephen Foster as part of a stellar program at Churchill Downs on this Downs After Dark program. And to help us figure everything out and maybe give you a tip or two is our good friend Ed DeRosa from Brisnet.com and from TwinSpires.com. He is also the co-host of our Brisnet.com call-in show here on the network every Thursday night with Anthony Stabile. Duke, the Duke of Degeneracy, welcome to the program, my friend.
Always good to be back, and like you said, hopefully get out a few winners.
Yeah, hopefully so. It's a pretty good program there tonight. You look at the five graded stakes and some, I would think, some pretty good betting opportunities in there. What say you?
Yeah, without question. Good mix, I think. The way I like to play, I definitely like to hang my hat on a few key opinions, and I think the stakes races have a few of those to my eye, and then some more open races that cast a wider net, try to catch a price. But hard to think that all stakes pick five won't pay big balloons. There just there has to be a price somewhere in there, maybe two. Hopefully, we'll find them. But really top to bottom races 1 through 11, lots of good competition, and for those in the area that can make the drive, great party atmosphere too.
Yeah, it's a great party atmosphere. It's always a fun night. The Stephen Foster is set for 9:47 Eastern, so that will be the last race in our coverage tonight. We'll get to that race in a minute, Ed. It's a field of 12, and I'm sure you'll have a couple of opinions there. But let's start with the first of the five greatest stakes races, the Grade 3 Matt Wynn, mile and a 16th. It is for the three-year-olds. How'd you see that race?
This is one of those I'm hanging my hat. I thought Mr. Money, even though he didn't have my money when he did it, was scintillating in the Pat Day. And it was one of those moments, because I had picked a stablemate by my standards to win the Derby. And just the way the game works, how hard it is to win these races, I definitely was nervous that Brett Calhoun had two aces up his sleeve, let alone one. So when Mr. Money aired, that kind of dulled my enthusiasm that this guy could win two on Derby Day. But that was, to me, one of the better performances on the undercard. The runner-up, of course, came back to win the Grade 1 Woody Stevens. Some others out of the race have come out to run well, so the form's holding up, and it's his race to lose. He's not a mortal lock in my mind, but I just think the rest behind him are competitive enough that I'm not really looking to go any deeper than Mr. Money. So we're going to know very early in this all stakes pick five, Mike, how it's going to go.
You're either in or you're out, right?
That's right. Yep. Yeah. You'll know me early, as they say.
I totally agree with you. I think he looks fantastic in there. That race was superb, and he likes Churchill Downs. Two out of three wins at Churchill. He should be very tough tonight.
And the owner's a big New Orleans supporter, and I know he has a big party for Mardi Gras, and that's the theme tonight. So it's all coalescing to a winner's circle celebration.
He's got Wildcat blue silks, too, so
yeah.
He's got all the bases covered.
Swami
he
Angle.
He has his own Zydeco band with him, then I'll know.
For sure. He is Ed DeRosa with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. All right, Ed, so that's the Matt Wynn. We then turn our attention to the Grade 2 Wise Dan, which is race number 6, post time of 8:37 Eastern. Always a fun race, mile and a 16th on the turf course.
Yeah, this is one where I'm casting a wider net to try to fish some prices out. The one for sure I landed on that's going to be on all my tickets is Bourbon Resolution for Ian Wilkes, making his first start on the turf. New Year's Day is okay as a turf sire. I mean, he's as good with that surface as any. He hasn't, you know, blown the doors off other than having the kind of Derby winner. But Ian worked this horse on the turf. From all accounts of people who have seen the horse work on the turf, they may have actually found his surface, even though he's a graded stakes winner on the dirt. Don't love the post, but I think we're getting compensated for it with the price. And I think he's dangerous with Ian making a cagey move here in the Wise Dan.
Well, it's a tough race. You can use several horses in here.
Yeah, and I will. You know, by no means is it all, you know, Bourbon Resolution, but I think with 14 going here, assuming there's just one scratch, which there has to be, but you know, even with 12 or 13, it's the type of race where you kind of want to look vertically too. There's casual money in the pools. So Bourbon Resolution for me, I'm going to check out the exacta will pays and things like that. I just have too strong of an opinion at a hopeful price, not to try to make some hay if he runs well.
I want to make sure we have time to get through all the greatest stakes, Ed, but who are a couple of the others that you'll have your eye on in that Wise Dan?
I'm getting my names mixed up with the regret. Let me grab my now the clock is ticking. I have my PPs.
Nothing like putting
on
them
the
on the spot,
table.
Right?
What's that?
Oh, wait, you're doing all this from memory?
I was until now. I picked 14, but I actually think if Parler draws in, he's dangerous. It'd be interesting to see if Corey stays aboard. Of the horses who probably will take money, I think the morning line favorites, like co-5-to-1 choices, definitely prefer it's in the post to admission office. The dirt runners from California haven't been doing great shipping east, but the turf has been okay. So to have a lot of respect for this old-timer, 7-year-old gelding. I think he fits with the better post than admission office got at a similar price. And then First Premio, drawn down inside for Mark Cassie, Brian Hernandez, keeping the mount. They don't team up a ton, these two, but the fact that Brian stayed pretty loyal to this horse for a trainer that doesn't ride him a ton, I thought is kind of interesting. So of the less than 10-to-1 horses, I'm 3-7, and then 14 and 15 from the far outside I think could blow things up.
All right, so I'm sure that you can do the next race by memory because there are only 6 horses. That's the Grade 2 Fleur-de-Lis. The favorite, Elate 8-5, as I referenced coming out of that last commercial break, looking for her first victory since last July. She'll face a stiff test from Blue Prize and from She's a Julie. Who is it in the Fleur-de-Lis?
I went with Elate, which I have tons of respect for the other two obvious ones, but with She's a Julie toting 124, I do think 4 pounds is enough to split hairs here. They're very similar talent-wise, but 4 pounds is pretty punitive against some really, really good fillies. So that was the reason I could draw a line through She's a Julie. And then Blue Prize, of course, fits too, but just a late consistently faster and overall has been fastest. I mean, there was talk of her, you know, running in the classic last year. So for Bill Mott to even mention that, I just think, you know, they're looking for a win here and they get to avoid Midnight Bizou, who came back and won the 5th. And it's the type of race too. I think a lot of people will say, oh, I could use all 3 and pretty much have it covered. Then they have to go leaner elsewhere in the pick 5. So this is another situation where I'm going to just stick a flag in a late, and if she wins, great. If not, I won't feel like I missed anything at one of the other two at 2-to-1. go Google yourself, though, from how I'm going to play the race. I'm definitely playing a tri-key box with her and the obvious three. And what that means is basically I'm playing two of the three to hit the board with go Google yourself, because I think she can have an impact as, you know, an outsider. And I think there'll be a ton of money that just take the obvious three and box them and do things like that or use all with them. So go Google yourself is my tri-key, but elates the pick five single.
Yeah, that's a great strategy. A lot of people miss that, but when you have a long shot that you like, it's good to put them with the contenders and see if you're walking around lucky. That could be a nice payoff.
Yeah, a little bigger field make me a little more excited to single her, but so many people, they'll go like three by three by all in the try or three by all by three, and it's just really inefficient. So, you know, again, it goes back to sticking with the opinion and just betting it. And I think she can be dangerous. And that's the type of, yeah, I'm betting a late in the pick five. I want her to win. But, you know, if it comes blue prize, go Google yourself, she's a Julie, that's a number I need to have with my opinion of go Google yourself.
Well, you'll get a big field in the next race, the Grade 2 Stephen Foster and Gift Box, 3-1 on the morning line. That is your morning line favorite for trainer John Sadler. Joel Rosario, who had a monster day at Belmont last Saturday, is looking to add to that with Gift Box here in the Stephen Foster. How'd you see that one, Ed?
Yeah, you know, I alluded to sort of the California form on dirt, and I'm gonna back that a little bit here. I do think Gift Box is among the more likely winners, but as the favorite, I'll try to beat him. On top, I landed on Tom's Detente. Just think he has a real tactical advantage here. Yes, there's 12 horses in the race, but to my eye, the only real contenders for legitimate front end speed that can go the mile and an eighth or Gift Box and Tom's Detente. So I'll take the longer price on a horse who does have a couple fast races on the page, including that Ali Sheba behind McKenzie. So Tom's Detente for me on top. But knowing that I'm pretty narrow in both the Matt Wynn and the Florida Lee, I am going to have Thirst for Life, Runaway Ghost, and I'll cop him on all my pick five tickets. This is the reason why we try to narrow elsewhere if we have a strong opinion to get live to some of these moonshots. And I think all three of those have a look that they could upset if the favorites don't show up.
All right, Duke, 1 minute or less. The Grade 3 Regret follows the Stephen Foster. That is the final of the five consecutive greatest stakes races. Mile and an eighth for the fillies, the three-year-old fillies on the turf. How'd you see that one?
I think Norm Cassie holds a big hand at 8-1. He has two horses in there, Hard Legacy and Bell Laura, both of whom he stopped on a little bit, regrouped for here. Just really like how both of them flashed some brilliance earlier in their career. Now we're getting the right price to see if Norm has at least one of them ready to fire for a graded stakes.
Stephen Foster specials at brisnet.com or twinspires.com. What's happening there tonight?
Brisnet.com/derby is all your Churchill Downs reports. Great information from Gus Alonso, workout reports from Bruno. And I'd be remiss, those looking ahead to Royal Ascot next week, tons of great information from Kelly Riley on the international scene. So we don't let up after tonight. It's going to be a great run to the Breeders' Cup over the next few months, guys.
All right, I have to get to this break, but Ed, I forgot to throw out a poll question at the top of the show, so I'm going to do it now, and I'm going to put you on the spot again. You don't know this is coming.
All right.
But with Father's Day being tomorrow, you have three beautiful children. With Father's Day tomorrow, I want to do this. We'll ask HRN Nation, for all the dads out there, what is the best Father's Day gift you have ever received? The best Father's Day gift you've ever received. You can go to @HRN on Twitter to weigh in and cast your vote or to comment on that question, and then we'll try to pass those along later in the program. How about for you, Duke, the best Father's Day gift you ever received?
I would say Lori, she had each kid hold a letter of dad, so D-A-D, and then put him in a three-picture frame. And it's just, I thought it was really thoughtful, and it's something I can look at every day, and it says dad, and it has all the kids in it. So that really is special to me, so I'll say that. And it's a good idea for anyone else out there looking for a gift. you know, if you have three kids or just hold one kid, hold the letters multiple times, whatever. But it was pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, if you only have one, you can do different poses or whatever. But, you know, for us, three kids, it was perfect. And it's something I've had on my desk ever since.
Beautiful. Well, happy Father's Day tomorrow, my friend.
Thank you. All right. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Ed DeRosa, BristNet.com, TwinSpires.com with us here on HRN. Yeah, go to our Twitter account and let us know the best Father's Day gift you ever received, and we'll try to read some of those as we move throughout the program here this morning. Going to get to our Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington on the corner of New Circle and Liberty here in Lexington, Kentucky. We'll come back and visit with Al Stahl Jr. talking about Tom's d'etat going postward in tonight's Stephen Foster. That's next, right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
On June 9, 1956, the field went postward for the running of the $50,000 Argonaut Handicap at Hollywood Park. In the field were Langoland Farms Porterhouse, who had whipped his chief rival in this field, Swaps, by a head in the last previous meeting of the two in the Californian. The very speedy Bobby Brocato with the master craftsman Johnny Longden in the irons. And, of course, Swaps, who had come off an injury as a three-year-old to make an attempt at a third world record. Swaps had already notched world records for 1 1/16 miles and a mile and 70 yards. The Hollywood Park had been especially groomed to be as fast as a one-arm paper hanger in a four-room apartment with a two-hour deadline. The anticipation was high amongst the patrons on this day for the import of a possible record-breaking performance. Trainer Mish Tenney said flatly and openly that his horse, Swaps, would lower Citation's world mark of 133-3 for the flat mile, a record that had stood since 1949. As the horses broke from the starting gate, it was expected that the very speedy Bobby Brocato with Longden in the saddle would go to the front to try to steal it. But Bill Shoemaker got Swaps out of the box like a rocket down along the fence, and he was not about to allow himself to get shut off by the speed horses outside of him going into the turn. Swaps established a clear lead going into the clubhouse turn. Shoemaker realized Longden was resigned to playing the waiting game, settling in just off the pace with Bobby Brocato. Schumacher turned that strategy to his own advantage while keeping lots of horse in reserve, setting the early fractions. Swaps had an open lead all the way down the backside while turning in a 22 3/4, 45 1 for the half, and 108 2 for the first six panels. As the field swung through the far turn in the glistening California sunlight, Longden made his expected move with Bobby Brocato, and with a quick burst of speed got his mount set up to Shoemaker's boot on the leader. The shoe went to the stick, cracking the flank of Swaps with a hard lick, and Swaps responded to again move clear. The Rex Ellsworth-owned four-year-old held sway during the run down the lane, and all eyes were now on the teletimer, which flashed 133-1 as he hit the wire, a new world record. Bobby Brocato had been beaten by barely a length in a supremely game effort, and Porterhouse, in receipt of 9 pounds from Swaps, was 6 lengths further back in third. Swaps had clocked the last half mile in a most impressive 48 flat. It was a third world record he had chalked up, and he was, in no uncertain terms, to be regarded as one of the all-time greats on the racetrack. He was blessed with class, courage, and a tremendous amount of ability, a sure-fire recipe for greatness. You know, not all fast horses are great, but all great horses are fast, and Swaps was undeniably fast indeed. Many observers on the scene at Hollywood Park on that June day in 1956 felt Swaps could have gone faster if he'd been pushed in the early part of the race, but it was breathtakingly fast as it was. June 9, 1956 at Hollywood Park in the Argonaut Handicap, the day Swaps set his third world mark.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Penna here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus Store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus Store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-mesh horse fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Power.
Here's the wire, and it's a photo finish that goes to Tonalist.
Passion.
It was Creator and Destin right on the wire. And Iran Ortiz raised his whip in victory.
Performance.
Taprit and Irish Warcry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Gainsway stallion Taprit is America's most dominant sire and has emerged as one of the most influential and breed-shaping stallions of the past half century. Among his 25 career Grade 1 winners are three Belmont Stakes champions, Tonalist, Creator, and Taprit. So far in 2019, Taprit has produced 18 stakes winners and 8 graded stakes winners. And in the sales ring, Taprit is the sire of 26 yearlings to bring $1 million or more at auction. Taprit, standing at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
This is Dale Romans, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Top of the stretch, 3/4 in 1 minute, 12.15 seconds. Tom's D'Etat has taken the lead. Fat Man charging, Snapper Sinclair. Pioneer Spirit under pressure as Colonel's Dark Temper has dropped back. They're deep in this final fairgrounds for long with Sean Bridgemahan. It's Tom's D'Etat on the outside. Fat Man in pursuit. Tom's D'Etat. Who dat gonna beat Tom's D'Etat in the Tenacious? Fat Man was second. Pioneer Spirit third. Snapper Sinclair finished fourth. Then Colonel's Dark Temper, Cuptado, and Thirst for Life.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on HRRN. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, that's the Baron and Pontiff, with you in our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. John Dooley with the call of the Tenacious at the fairgrounds back on December 22nd. Having a little fun with that call as Tom's D'Etat draws off to win by 3.5 lengths. He would come back and finish ninth in the Pegasus World Cup before running a bang-up second in the Grade 2 Ali Sheba behind McKenzie. He's back in action tonight at Churchill Downs in the Grade 2 Stephen Foster, and he is trained by our good friend Al Stahl Jr., who joins us now on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Al, good morning, my friend. Happy Stephen Foster Day.
Thank you. I appreciate y'all having me on, and it's a beautiful day so far this morning here at Churchill Downs, and hopefully the weather hangs in there the rest of the evening, and everybody's looking forward to it. You can feel the energy. It's around.
Well, to steal a line from John Dooley, who dat gonna beat Tom's D'Etat and the Stephen Foster tonight?
Right. I'm all in. we're happy to be here on a home racetrack, and kind of really aren't, you know, I brought the weather up earlier because I'm kind of sweating it a little bit. His form is a little bit better on dry racetracks. As a matter of fact, it's borderline spectacular on dry racetracks, and we just want it to be that way this evening. So we're feeling good about everything, and we just want, you get to this point, there's a whole lot of factors that come in that you can't control, the trip, the weather, the surface, things like that, that you just hope that go your way.
Well, you got this horse a long time ago. He's 6 years old now. His first race, came in 2016. Yeah, you've just really taken your time with him all the way along. Talk about the journey that you've had with this horse.
Right. Well, you hear the trainer speak of nagging injuries and things like that. This is the definition of a series of nagging injuries. I had some ankle problems along the line. I mean, you're an ex-trainer, Jude, and you're a leg man. And if you come look at his legs, they're skin tight, no mush, no heat, no nothing. He just had a chip as a young horse and some of that subchondral bone bruising and just things. And 6 months here, 6 months there, and poof, here you are, six-year-old horse. And we love this horse, and we've known he's just full of talent. And we're kind of amazed that here we are at age six with, you think there'd be some sort of, maybe some sort of arthritic type stuff going on with him. And whether there is or not, he doesn't show it, and he doesn't let us know about it, and it doesn't show in his races. So we're very happy with this horse. We love him, and he's a tough horse, and he's just full of class. He looks the part, and everything is kind of, he made from the Ali Sheba to this race with no hiccups, no anything. So that's good for Tom's
Etat. That's good. That's good for almost any horse, but when you have one that you've had to turn out so many times, it really is a good thing. And I mean, you look at his form and the job you've done with them, it's really sensational, and it's a tribute to what you do with all your horses and how you take your time, and you're never in a rush, and you never feel like you have to run them. You just do what's right for the horse. And I just wish you all the good luck tonight, because it's been a fantastic ride and a great job.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. I mean, Gail Benson and the team, they're not going to run out of money, but still, a lot of people with a lot of money don't have patience, but they've just let us do whatever we felt was right by the horse, and they bought that beautiful farm over in over your neck of the woods, and kind of by Town and Country there, the old Greenwood Lodge, and he spent some time over there with David Schoen, and every time he's come in from there, he looks spectacular. So the whole group has just been patient, and he's the kind of horse you want to really do everything for him, because he's just that type of horse. And I personally like older horses. I mean, I've never run a horse in the Derby or the Oaks, or I would like to, but I just, I don't mind having a 4, 5, 6-year-old horse. I'm excited about the Fox tonight as I would be about the Risen Star at the fairgrounds for a 3-year-old. So we're glad to be here.
Talking with Al Stahl Jr. here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Al, you bring up the name Gail Benson, and I'm glad that you did. Her husband, Tom, of course, the two of them, the owners of the New Orleans Saints, the New Orleans Pelicans, and they've also been part of the horse racing industry now for several years and really involved in the sport. Well, Tom passed away in March of last year. Gail has continued on. Talk about her continued commitment to thoroughbred racing and what it's like now that Tom is no longer around and what it's like for Gail.
Well, Mr. Benson knew he wasn't going to live forever. He got his family issues behind him before he passed away. I'm sure you remember the drama. It was all over the news, and he kind of got that taken care of, and he obviously bought that. I think the thing that tells you their commitment is buying that fabulous farm over there in Lexington. Obviously, he knew he wasn't going to buy it and, hang around for 10 more years. So that was an investment in the future that Gail really enjoys, going there, and their brood mare band and their babies. And they're like, rabbits. You got 10 one year, then you got 20 the next and 30 the next. So they're doing a little commercial stuff, and I think they're in it for the long haul, and they're playing it on all levels, like I said, from the sales to the racetrack.
Well, Tom's d'etat, 5-1 on the morning line for tonight's Grade 2 Stephen Foster. Al, other than, running faster than all the other horses, what's the key to victory for Tom's d'etat tonight?
Oh, I just think, like I said earlier, I think it's pure luck from here on out. I mean, we need the right trip. You know, there looks like there's some speed that could all change. For a big horse, he jumps extremely well from the gate. So he'll place himself somewhere forwardly, I'm guessing. And from the nine hole, I guess even he can hopefully work over just a little bit. And you know, just it's up to Sean and the horse. And there's not much I can say or do besides, you know, good luck and hopefully things go our way. That's what it takes to win these type of races.
He has such good tactical speed, and he can, you know, kind of be forwardly placed, or he can sit just off the pace. That's got to give you some confidence going in, because no matter what happens in the race, Sean should be able to find a good spot for him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He might have gotten the bridle a hair in his last race. He was a little fresh. I missed some time with him. But in general, he does exactly what the rider wants at all times. So he does it in the mornings also. So we have the luxury of that, or Sean has the luxury of that. And just like, so whatever happens, happens.
Al, you have kind of made a mark in the sport, I guess, by winning the Breeders' Cup Classic and upsetting Zenyatta with Blame back in 2010 beneath those same twin spires that you'll be racing under tonight. Just kind of curious, do you ever go back and reminisce and watch that race even today?
Not really. Every once in a while, well, you see it on TV all the time, so you see that Blame Zenyatta last 16th of a mile or last whatever it is. So I mean, that's enough as far as like YouTube or we've got some. Amy Zimmerman sent us some edited, you know, DVDs back then, and you could literally just pop it in and watch the whole thing in about, you know, 20 something minutes. But not too often. But I mean, it's not like we don't think about it all the time and talk about it all the time. It's just we're just moving on, and he's got horses on the racetrack. Every time I see a Blame, I, you know, shut everything down and watch it run, you know, things like that. So it's in our hearts. That's the most important thing.
How much Blame memorabilia do you have around your house?
You know, not as much as you'd think. I'm not a big memorabilia, but, you know, I've got my wife, Nicole, and my kids are, you know, they're into all kind of stuff. So we've got, you know, we've got Blame hats like a lot of people have. And there's a special reserve hat that Bernie Sams made with a Z with the, you know, the stop, the red line going across it like they do, you know, like no left turn. You know, there's a very limited edition of those, so we got a couple of those. And then somebody, you know, made some shadow boxing stuff with the shadow box stuff. And, you know, there's a few things. The stuff that means the most is some stuff that was signed by Garrett. You know, so we've got some, you know, photos and some stuff that Garrett signed. I guess maybe I signed it too, but not compared to Garrett, that doesn't match up at all. So that's important to all of us because we were pretty close those last few years, and you know, everybody knows where that went.
Yeah, Garrett was such a great guy, and that was a race that I always think about when I go to Churchill Downs, when I head up to our location, which is right on the wire, and I'm always reminded of that race. I'll never forget it. It was such a dramatic race. It was in the dark. It was just really, really cool. And I was very happy for you that day. And I cashed a nice ticket too, which is always important.
no doubt. The mutuals were always good on Blaine because he was in with Quality Road and Zenyatta, and there was always some monster in there that he took the back seat to. So yeah, it was good for the mutuals. There's no doubt about that.
Well, Al, listen, appreciate the visit here this morning. All the best with Tom's d'etat tonight in the Stephen Foster. We'll remind people one more time before I let you go that our coverage comes up from 8 to 10 on Sirius XM 156 and, of course, streaming worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. Go get it done, my friend.
Okay, guys, we're all in, so we can't wait. Thank you.
All right, and Al Stahl, like all of our guests who appear on the program, is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at embracetherace.com. Won't be long. We'll be back up in Saratoga, the home of Embrace the Race. Get a chance to visit with our good friend Mike D'Anzaris, his lovely wife Jill. Go see the new store there on Broadway. I say new store. Gosh, I guess it's been open for more than a year now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still think of it as a new store.
Well, it's kind of new.
Yeah.
If you haven't been there, you got to go. Yeah. They have great stuff, beautiful merchandise. It's well worth a visit.
Isn't Saratoga, when's that open? Next week?
Week after, I think.
It's unbelievable. It's trying to get my arms and my head wrapped around that.
Yeah, it's coming faster than you think.
Yeah, we'll be there every single Saturday throughout the meet to bring you our Saturdays at Saratoga broadcast series. Live coverage of the major stakes races every Saturday throughout the meet. You can head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast, or check out the podcast. Check out our schedule. Well, you can listen to podcasts too, but you can see our entire broadcast schedule and that Saturdays at Saratoga schedule. Going to be a fun meet.
Yeah, definitely an extra week this year, and that screwed a lot of people up with their reservations and stuff, but it's always nice to have an extra week at the spa.
All right, busy second half of the show coming up from 9 to 10. We're going to focus on talking with David McCaffrey, talking about the Illinois gambling bill that is awaiting a signature from the governor. He is David, the executive director of the Illinois Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. Then we're going to visit with Eric Hamelback, who is the CEO of the National HBPA. They have been front and center at the conversation about horse racing safety and medication issues. We'll get a chance to visit with Eric 9:30 Eastern time. All of that still to come, plus our industry star of the week, which is up next. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Attention, Kentucky Breds. Make plans to race at the upcoming Kentucky Downs meet starting August 31st, where Kentucky Breds compete for huge purses. Kentucky Breds will run for $130,000 in maiden events, with allowance races offering up to $145,000, the highest in the nation. With just 5 days of racing, showcasing 14 stakes races and 4 graded stakes, with additional purse money available for KTDF eligible horses, Kentucky Downs is the place to race a Kentucky Bred this summer. Visit KentuckyBred.org for details.
Springtime tips and fun facts from Paul, Kristen, and Dexter at Total Wine & More.
Did you know there were over 1 million bubbles in a glass of champagne? Did someone say brunch?
Wine is made in virtually every country in the world, and I'm ready to give you a tour to find the right one.
Ham's sweet and salty richness pairs perfectly with a juicy Pinot Noir.
Now with 2 locations in Lexington. Visit our newest store in Hamburg, off Sir Barton Way. Shop online at TotalWine.com. The selection is ridiculous. Cheers!
Broken Vow continues to deliver rock-solid results. The top 10 Son of Unbridled has sired nearly 150 black-type stakes horses, 75 black-type stakes winners, and over $71 million in earnings. Among those sired by Broken Vow last season were Chocolate Martini, winner of the Grade 2 Fairgrounds Oaks, and Life in Shambles, winner of the Grade 3 Fall Highweight. Sire of Eclipse Champion Champagne Room, Broken Vow has sired additional Grade 1 winners, Unbridled Belle, Rosalind, Sassy Image, and Cotton Blossom. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Hamvir Park has run by newspaper of record to win the Wonder again under Jose Ortiz.
Cambier Park, the 3-year-old daughter of Darley stallion Medaglia d'Oro, scored in the Grade 3 Wonder Again Stakes at Belmont this past weekend for trainer Chad Brown. She defeated Breeders' Cup winner Newspaper of Record, and that win gave Cambier Park her second graded stakes victory in 5 starts while earning a lifetime best 90 by her speed figure. And she is your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro is the horse with the Midas touch. In 2018, Medaglia d'Oro joined Northern Dancer, Stormcat, and AP Indy as the only stallions ever to sire as many as $8 million yearlings in a single year. Watch for his latest crop of yearlings at the upcoming Select Sales. Learn more about Medaglia d'Oro and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Yo, guys, they call me Jersey Joe, but it's only Joe Bravo. Call me whatever you like. Just so happy that you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Midnight Bizou's going to ride the rail right in behind Come Dancing. as they make their way to the top of the stretch. Three quarters in 109.23. They're into the stretch. Come Dancing turns for home in front. Midnight Bizou now ranges up alongside, and she goes on by. Oh, and she's pulling away. Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others. Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand. And then it was Come Dancing, Mopetism, and Escape Clause.
Yeah, Midnight Bizou absolutely leaving no doubt last Saturday on that Belmont undercard. She dominated the Grade 1 Ogden Phipps under Mike Smith for our good friend Jeff Bloom and his Bloom Racing stable. And Jeff was our industry star of the week last Saturday, so we thought we'd pass along an update and let you know that Jeff did indeed get that victory last Saturday with Midnight Bizou. And it leads us to a bit of a discussion, JT, as to which filly is the best filly in the country. Is it now Midnight Bizou, who has paired up back-to-back Grade 1 victories, or may it be somebody else, like we're going to see tonight in the the Florida Lee on the Stephen Foster undercard, maybe somebody like Elate or She's a Julie or even Blue Prize?
Well, I don't know, even Blue Prize. Blue Prize is pretty nice. Elate's okay. She's kind of out of form. She hasn't been running up to her usual. She's a very quirky filly. She could win tonight. She's a Julie ran great last time. She has to carry a lot of weight against the other two tonight, but I don't think we can ignore Monomoy Girl. I mean, I don't know where she is or what
she
she's doing.
Ignored until she shows up again.
You can say that about
she's
you
a
and
non-factor.
I. You can say that about us.
Yeah, right now she's a non-factor in my opinion. She hasn't raced yet.
I know, but right? She's still good, and she's supposedly coming back. She hasn't retired. So, I mean, in my mind, she's the best filly. Midnight Bizou could never really get by her. Last year, but that was last year.
She beat her once, right?
Well, it was DQ, wasn't it?
Right, right.
Yeah, it was by DQ.
Yeah, because Monomoy Girl cheated.
Yeah, well.
Okay. You don't get DQ'd unless you do something illegal.
Okay. Well, that's fine. That's fine. We'll give you one. We'll give you one out of, what, six or
right,
something?
Right, right. Yeah. No. It, being completely unbiased here, you're right. Monomoy Girl is obviously all world, right? I mean, that's an understatement. We know that she is really, really good. I just pulled her up on Equibase. There are no workouts listed for Monomoy Girl at all. So right now, she's not even in this discussion, right?
Yeah.
The top filly or mare in the country, she's not even in there.
And I think that's fair. I mean, of the fillies that have performed this year, you'd have to say that Midnight Bizou is the top, I think. I think she's the top, and everybody else has to measure up. Now, Blue Prize ran against Monomoy Girl and got beat a length and a half, but I don't see she also in that same race. Midnight Bizou beat her ahead, so they're pretty close.
Yeah, and Midnight Bizou beat Elate each of the last two times.
Like a drum. I mean, that's my thing about Elate tonight is,
see, she's got to prove that she can be Elate again.
Right. Right. And
I think this is an important race for her.
It is, because Anthony and I talked about it yesterday on Express Bet Radio, and Elate, was kind of quirky. Do you remember she was like a buzz horse? She broke her main by 14 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple races later, she was eased, mm-hmm. Because she was being Elate, being quirky. And she's kind of gotten back to the quirkiness action. So I don't know what she's going to do or how she's going to run. Her blowout was nice, so we'll see what happens. But, it's an interesting division.
The winner of tonight's Florida Lee will earn an automatic berth into the Breeders' Cup Distaff. The winner of the Stephen Foster will be automatically qualified for a spot in the starting gate of the Breeders' Cup Classic. And again, a field of 12 going in the Stephen Foster. Our coverage 8-10. You can join Tom Leach and the pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, live from Churchill Downs. They will bring you that coverage on Sirius XM 156. And you can stream us anywhere you might be in the world at horseracingradio.net. Throughout the poll question this morning, a little bit late, but I did get to it. Not so much of a poll question, but just a question looking for your comments. what is the best Father's Day gift you have ever received? With Father's Day coming up tomorrow, thought it would be kind of fun to have people weigh in on that. How about for you, JT? What do you think?
Well, you know, my daughter Casey, she's great at picking out cards, and she almost is 100% at making me cry on Father's Day. She's the Mike Pena of card givers.
And I'm going to see if I can make Eric Hamelbat cry in the second half of the show. I'll try to hit him up. Well, I'll ask him the Father's Day question. Get him talking about the kids.
Yeah, there you go. But there was a Tommy Bahama shirt that I really, really wanted, and it was rather expensive, and somebody had told the kids, probably Gretchen, that I wanted that, and it showed up, and that was very nice. I was really happy about that.
Well, so far, we have received zero comments to the poll question at HRN on Twitter. Come on, dads, let's hear from you. You know, I guess maybe nobody's getting anything for Father's Day. Damn kids.
Dads need to up their game, obviously.
Cost you money. This is why I never had kids, right? It costs you money. It's ridiculous.
It's the best thing you can ever do is have
kids. So I'm told. All right, I'm going to go ahead and get to a quick break. Actually, let's do this. Let's pause 10 seconds for station identification. Then we'll get set for the second half of the show. We'll be joined by David McCaffrey, who is the executive director of the Illinois Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. That is next, right after this 10-second station ID on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Point of Honor has taken the lead. Ulele runs after her. Cookie Dough is third. Point of Honor and Ulele down to the wire. Point of Honor wins the black-eyed Susan Under, hot-riding Javier Castellano.
There's an eighth of a mile to go. Bolo keeps on going. River Boyne on the inside. Catapult far outside. Bowie Zero. But Bolo has something left for the final 16th, and it's going to be Bolo coast to coast in the Shoemaker Mile.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Mr. Ritz and Super Tabbit neck and neck. Super Tabbit, Mr. Ritz, they hit the wire. A headbop between the two Super Tabitol. Mr. Ritz, a headbop decides it. A thriller in the Eclipse.
Hunting Horn trying to hold on. Here comes Channel Maker on the outside, ranging up alongside. Magic Wand and Arc Lower closing in two. Channel Maker strikes the front. Channel Maker wins the battle war.
Now, here's Mike Pena and Jude Feld.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment here in the month of June. Happy to have you back with us. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, and our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the first half of the program, our interview with Ed DeRosa from Briss and Twin Spires, and our interview with trainer Al Stahl Jr., all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast of this show and all of our programs at your leisure. That's horseracingradio.net. And JT, I noticed as we were in that segue segment into the second half of the program that after we gave a little recap of last week's Industry Star of the Week presented by Stuart Morris, that I was negligent in reading Stewart's commercial for him. So let me go ahead and do that real quick. We're going to get to David McCaffrey here to kick off hour two in just a second. But you want to remember, with the yearling sales season coming up, that Stuart Morris does indeed offer a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. And he always likes to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. His success is because of you. And he always remembers that. With multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels, and I can promise you when you stop by his consignment that you're going to love what you see. So stop by and see Stuart Morris at any of the major yearling sales coming up throughout the country. Face at Tipton, Keeneland, wherever it might be, Stuart will have his shingle hung outside the barn, and he'll be able to help you out.
Yeah, he's a fine horseman and a good guy. You're going to like him.
All right, big news coming out of Illinois over the course of the past week and a half or so. There is a new gambling bill that has been crafted and is just awaiting the signature from the governor. And David McCaffrey is the executive director of the Illinois Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. That is welcome news to not only the racetracks throughout Illinois, but the breeders as well. And David is kind enough to spend a little time with us here this morning on the Equine Forum. David, good morning. Thanks for taking the time.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on your success with this this new gambling bill.
Thank you very much. It's like winning, in a way, it's like winning the Kentucky Derby.
it's huge. It's huge, not just, as I mentioned, to the racetracks, but to the breeders, to the industry as a whole in the state of Illinois. Take us through some of the parameters of what's been laid out.
Well, you're absolutely right. It's going to take a little while. I'm trying to tamp down the instant gratification that people think that we might get from this, because it's going to take a little while to get up and going. First thing that you referenced is we need the signature of the governor. However, he's publicly stated that he's on board, and it's not a matter of if, it's when, and we expect his signature in the next somewhere in the next 2 to 3 to 4 weeks. So that's the first thing that needs to happen. Then there's a process that requires the racetracks to get licensed as essentially casino operators. That is anyone's guess how long that takes. It's somewhere between 3 to 6 months is the best I can tell. And then they need to build some sort of either temporary facility or build a permanent facility at which all of these machines and table games and sports betting outlets will go. So I'm thinking that somewhere in the neighborhood of 9 to 15 months, we should start getting some of the benefits, some of the direct economic benefits from the bill. But certainly, as you referenced, this provides the passage of the bill and the governor being so open to sign it. It provides hope, and Illinois horsemen, it provides them the chance to dream. So I think that dreaming and hope are two cornerstones of horse racing. So it's a nice position to be in. We're certainly in a better position today than we were a week or two ago.
Yeah, because there were no hopes and dreams a couple of weeks ago. I mean, that's essentially the way Illinois racing is, and it was terrible. I mean, you have a facility like Arlington International Racecourse, which is my favorite racetrack and one of the best racetracks in the country by far, and such love for that track from the owner and the operator, and it was just a shame. I never could understand why there weren't more people there, you know, and why more horsemen didn't support it. But the purses have gotten very low. It's hard to get people to race for small purses because it's so expensive to keep a racehorse in training. And this is a real shot in the arm for the whole sport in Illinois, and that's going to make it better for everybody in the country.
You said a mouthful.
Yeah, it's so true. You know, David, when you and I spoke, I guess it was Thursday, and I asked you to come on the program, you just to kind of lay out exactly how bad things have gotten in the state of Illinois with that racing program and the breeding program, you threw out a very telling statistic about the number of foals in Illinois this past year. Walk us through some of those statistics so that people understand how far things have kind of gone downhill in the state and why this is so important.
Yeah, to say the breeding industry in Illinois has been ravaged would be an understatement. Just in the last 10 years, so 10 years ago, going back to 2009, there were 782 Illinois thoroughbred foals. Last year, we were down to 187. And this year through June 1st, and essentially the season's over, there are 147 on the ground. So just in 10 years, 782 to 147. And if you combine harness racing, which is a big thing in Illinois, it used to be at least, those numbers are even worse. We go back to 2008, there were 2,400 thoroughbred and harness horses, 2,401 thoroughbred and harness foals born. And last year, that number, the combined number, was down to 334.
Wow.
I did the math on it. It's an 86% drop in the number of foals born in the two breeds, and each one is separated the same way. So it's beyond belief what's happened to it. And one of the things, we'll get into the bill here in a minute, the specifics of it, but one of the specifics of the bill is that breeders' awards are increased from a base rate of 11% now that breeders are getting on first, second, and third place finishes, and that will be increased to 20%. So it'll be a double victory for breeders because, A, the purses will go up, and, B, the amount, the percentage that they get award-wise will increase. So it'll naturally go up because the percentage will go up, but also because the purses will be higher, the amount, the factor that you're multiplying by the purses will increase. So it's a doubleheader win, and I'm hoping that it resurrects the breeding program because, like those numbers point out, it's in a shambles.
Yeah, well, Illinois had such a great history in thoroughbred sports, and it's a shame to see it go away. So this really can rejuvenate the whole industry and maybe get some more people investing money in Illinois breds and that type of thing. What can the horsemen and the breeders expect to gain out of this at the end of your 15-month projection?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's three main parts to the bill that the horsemen focused on when we tried to negotiate the bill with the racetracks, and then we took that negotiation to Springfield. Sadly, we did this 10 years ago, and we've been trying this long. And, you know, it actually passed the House and the Senate twice in 2011 and 2012, and then it was vetoed by the governor. Then it would pass the House, you know, one year, and then it would pass the Senate the next year, and it wouldn't pass the other chamber, and it was just an unmitigated disaster trying to get this thing passed. But now it has, and the governor's going to sign it. So the first thing that we tried to ensure was a good amount of money going from these machines and table games to the purse account. And we are at the lowest number. It's a sliding scale going up. The better the machines do, the better the Racino does. But the lowest number we get, the lowest number the purse account will get from the machines is 12.75%. And that probably means nothing to most people. However, when you put it into perspective of other states, I did a quick synopsis here of some other states over the last few days. Maryland, in comparison, gets somewhere in the neighborhood of 6% from their machines located at the casinos outside of the racetracks. New York's getting about 7.5%, and Delaware is getting 9.6%. And again, the rate in Illinois will be, the base rate in Illinois will be 12.75, and if the projections play out like we hope they will, will be somewhere in the neighborhood of a blended rate of 14 or 15%, which is terrific. We don't get quite as many machines as a place like New York. We get 1,200 positions at each track. However, when you consider the rate being so good, I think that it will mean a lot. The other thing that the bill does, one of the other three parts that the bill does, is it eliminates recapture. And that's like a four-letter word in Illinois, and I'm sure it means nothing to your listeners nationally. But it's a provision that was passed in 1994, and it allowed racetracks to dip into the purse account and take from the purse account money that had otherwise been earned for the purse account. And it's a big number. This year alone, it's $7.5 million between Arlington and Hawthorne. And we're going to generate about $30 million this year for purses. So we generate $30 million, but there's like this huge asterisk in the form of recapture. And after it's all said and done, that $30 million turns into about $22 million. Recapture going forward in the year subsequent to the machines starting to operate, slot machines and table games, recapture goes away. So it's a win in terms of the money that is generated for the purse account will stay in the purse account. So if things stay the same, we can expect hopefully around $30 million to be generated for the purse account just in handle alone, okay, just in horse racing related stuff alone, and that money will stay there. So that's a big, big thing. And then the third part of the bill that we're very proud of and happy about is that we negotiated a schedule of racing guarantees, minimum racing guarantees. And one of the things that happens, sadly, as racinos filter through states, is a notion by racetracks that sometimes less racing is better. This bill establishes minimums that racetracks have to race, provided that they have the horses, a minimum number of days that racetracks have to race in order to keep their positions. And those days increase in the 3 years subsequent to the bill passing. And hopefully the game plan is in year three and four, we want to be back to 174 racing dates in Illinois, which puts us back to the 2012 and 13 levels, which would be, you know, it would be a reburgeoning of the whole industry in Illinois. So you've got the end of recapture, which will keep what we generate in handle in the purse account. You've got added money coming in at a base rate of 12.75%, which is a terrific rate comparatively nationally. And then you've got a minimum number of days that are guaranteed to be offered to Illinois horsemen. And those three things, I, if you want a specific number, I'm hoping in year two, three, and four, as things go up and are at full throttle, that we're racing for somewhere in the neighborhood of $40 to $50 million and over 170 days. And it'll be a great thing. To put it into comparison, we're racing after recapture for this year for about $21 million.
Wow. David McCaffrey, the executive director of the Illinois Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, doing a tremendous job spelling out the details of the new gambling bill that is awaiting Governor Pritzker's signature there in the state. David, when is the governor expected to sign the bill?
He has 60 days after he receives it. He received it about a week ago, so he's got technically about 50 days left. But we're expecting him to sign it in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
And once that is in place, each of the three racetracks in the state will have their own racino on site. Is that right?
Well, they'll have the capability of getting it.
Yep.
They have to apply for the license, and that takes 3 to 6 months, we're thinking. And then they have to build some sort of a facility and install the machines and install the tables and all of that stuff. So, but yes, the answer to your question is yes.
Yeah, it would be a huge boost in the arm to everyone throughout the state, as David just alluded to. And David, we'll caution people again, this is not necessarily a quick fix. It's not going to be an overnight fix. It's going to take some time for things to work through the system. But once it is up and running and that time has been granted, this could conceivably be the thing that saves racing in the state of Illinois.
No doubt about it. I mean, if you look at states, I mean, there's hardly a state that you could give me that has this sort of a racino type existence that didn't succeed and didn't flourish right off the bat. I mean, look at Indiana and look at Pennsylvania and Ohio, just the most recent one. The breeding programs come back very quickly. Now that takes 2, 3, 4 years to get going also. But yes, the model is in place for this to be successful, and we expect it to in Illinois also.
Well, congratulations to you for doing such a great job, and it sounds like you've dotted all the I's and crossed the T's, and hopefully there's a sense of urgency in Illinois to get this underway and expedite matters as soon as possible.
Thank you very much. It was quite a process. One of the cool little stories that happened was, for better or for worse, when you've been at this for so long, we've developed relationships with a bunch of legislators, and I've been surprised, actually, by the number of legislators that have called us, even two that voted against the bill, but they work with us on some other issues, have called us to say congratulations. You guys stuck it out and kept trying, and hopefully you'll get rewarded for your efforts, and this will be successful like it has been in other states.
Yeah, well, David, again, I'll echo Jude's sentiments and pass along my congratulations as well. Well done by you and Mike Campbell and the entire team there at the Illinois Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. Keep up the great work. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and of course everyone can wear what they love by going to embracetherace.com. David, appreciate the visit. Thanks for taking the time, and keep it rolling. We'll await that signature from the governor.
Thanks, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
All right, well done. David McCaffrey here on HRRN. You heard him lay out some of those statistics with the full count and things like that, and you know the amount of money that they're racing for now and where it could be once this is all in place. I mean, this is a game changer.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, the state of thoroughbred racing in Illinois has been in a bad way for quite a while, and the purses at Arlington have been down, and they really needed some help, a shot in the arm to get things going. And of course, this is going to be fantastic for a lot of people that are involved in the sport and love the sport, and it's going to make Arlington, you know, one of the tracks that people are going to want to visit, that people are going to want to race at. So anytime you can return to national prominence, it's good.
All right. Coming up next, we're going to be joined in studio by Eric Hamelback, who is the CEO of the National HPPA. We'll talk about some of the legislation that he has been working hard to get passed, and we'll talk about some of the issues facing the sport right now. We'll do that next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Penna here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Woodbine is now racing 4 days a week, every Wednesday night, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And racing is back on the turf, as the E.P. Taylor Turf Course, home to the longest stretch in North America, is now available, along with the new 7-furlong inner turf course set to open in mid-June. Premium racing days this month include the Grade 2 Connaught Cup, June 1st, the Woodbine Oaks and Queens Plate Trial, June 8th, and the Queens Plate Festival, June 28th and 29th. Visit woodbine.com today.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
Castleton Lions is proud to introduce precocious multiple graded stakes winner Protonico for the 2019 breeding season. A Son of Giants Causeway out of an AP Indy mare, Protonico rolled to a 12 3/4 length victory in his debut as a 2-year-old before taking the Grade 3 Smarty Jones and Grade 3 Discovery Handicap at 3, followed by an ultra game win in the Grade 2 Ali Sheba at Churchill Downs in his 4-year-old season. Protonico joins a Castleton Lions stallion roster that includes multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti and Blue Blood Sprinter Justin Phillip.
Gio Ponti is the sire of Eclipse champion Dre Fong, Canadian Classic winner Sir Dudley Diggs, and Stakes winners Miss Technicality and America's Tale. While Justin Philip is represented by exciting stakes-winning filly Safe to Say and stakes place runners Justaholic, Blushing Justine, and Upset Brewing. Protonico, Gio Ponti, and Justin Philip standing at Castleton Lions.
Hi, this is Shug McGahee, and I really enjoy listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
5/16 of a mile to go. Prime attraction, Gift Box. Gift Box puts his gray head in front. McKenzie makes his move on the outside, taking second. And here is the match race. Gift Box and McKenzie square off in the big gap, and McKenzie comes right to him with a furlong left to go. Mongolian Groom is in third, followed by Prime Attraction. It's Gift Box and McKenzie in a showdown. McKenzie or Gift Box, nose and nose. Neither one giving an inch. McKenzie, Gift Box or McKenzie, Gift Box. Gift Box, a nostril over McKenzie. Then it was Mongolian Groom and Campaign, followed by Prime Attraction.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios right here in the heart of the Bluegrass. Gift Box winning the Santa Anita Handicap. That was Frank Miramati with the call. He is the 3-1 morning line favorite in tonight's Grade 2 Stephen Foster at Churchill Downs. As we go racing under the lights, we'll have coverage for you of four graded stakes races, four of the five, right here on the network tonight. SiriusXM 156 is where you can hear that coverage from 8 to 10 Eastern. You can join the voice of the UK Wildcats, Tom Leach, and Jude, right to my left here, the pontiff of the Pick Four. They will be high above the finish line to bring you that coverage later this evening. 8 to 10, SiriusXM 156, and streaming worldwide, horseracingradio.net. You going to try and get him to say Touchdown Kentucky at any point?
I hope not.
You know, he was on the show with me, the Equine Forum here last Saturday from Belmont to talk about that race. And Tom joined me for about 12 or 15 minutes or so. And there was what looked to be, couldn't tell if it was a soccer field, almost looked more like a football field that had been chalked out in the infield at Belmont Park. And so I was kind of waiting. There was nothing going on out there. I guess if there was, maybe Tom could have done a little play-by-play for us.
Yeah, probably a soccer match, I would bet.
Yeah. I can't, you know, this will be the first broadcast that Tom, who has been part of our coverage team for the past few years, be the first one that he actually hosts here, because he's typically down below trackside and in the winner's circle. And I am so excited to get him into the mix here and listen to him do his thing. You know, he's so good with the play-by-play that he does for UK football and for basketball. This is a little different shtick, but he'll be so good. I can't wait to hear it tonight.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's a talented guy, and, you know, he loves horse racing, so that's a big plus. We work well together. That's a big plus. And yeah, I've been looking forward to it for a couple of weeks. Yeah. I did a really nice promo for the show.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. Lee's been playing
his last game. Yourself.
If I do so.
It was brilliant.
I do nothing but brilliant work, actually.
Oh, God.
For those of you who haven't noticed.
Here, hold on. Wait, we got to expand the door to see if Jude can get out the door when he leaves here.
Yeah. Well, no brag, just fact.
All right. Well, Eric Hamelback is here talking about doing brilliant work. He has been hard at it as the CEO of the National HBPA and returning from Washington, D.C., where he spends an awful lot of time these days. And Eric is now joining us in our studio here in Lexington. Eric, good morning, my friend. Welcome home.
Good morning, guys. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. And looks great. You guys look great. Glad to be here. And it's a beautiful day. Churchill's going to be amazing tonight, so I'm excited.
You said that you were going to have to play hurt this morning, a little bit under the weather today after that trip to D.C., and I think a lot of people maybe feel that way after they come back with dealing with politicians up there these days.
Absolutely.
But one thing you told me, you said, you know, I really am trying not to talk that much. I said, well, this is going to be great radio.
Yeah, great for the radio to have. Luckily, though, at least it is still radio, and you get my voice, not my face.
So. Yeah, so many different issues facing the sport now. Medication, equine safety. Where do we start? Lay out where we are currently, I guess where we've come from and where we are currently with some different things so that people can kind of have an understanding of what's going on behind the scenes.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, I think for the most part, I want to make sure that, everyone realizes that the HBPA, our members, myself, we are as concerned as any by what has happened at Santa Anita that has brought this negative spotlight upon us all. I do think that the industry has made tremendous strides, whether it be looking towards the NTRA Safety Alliance and the programs that have been initiated through them. I look to the ARCI, the NUMP, National Uniform Medication Program, what you have now with 94% of the paramutual handle in the United States is under the controlled therapeutic substance list. You know, the one thing that people continue to say is not uniform, is medication. And I just would like to remind folks, the RMTC, the Racing Medication Testing Consortium, and the ARCI instituted NUMP, National Uniform Medication Program, in 2013. And I know that's not a lot of acronyms, but I'm cognizant of, or at least I've been forced to be cognizant of, the fact that we throw around a lot of acronyms, and even into the industry, people aren't aware of that. But please remember that the program that the ARCI adopted really started in 2013. And what we are doing and moving forth in uniformity, I think, has been an amazing stride. I'm not going to sit here and lie and say every jurisdiction is the same. But when you do look at the NUMP program, RMTC, you have 12 jurisdictions that are 100% compliant under NUMP, something that the mainstream media continues to give credit to. You have 20 of the 34 paramutual jurisdictions that are currently active also have 3 of the 4. Now, why only 3 of 4? Comes back to funding. And funding is one of the biggest problems that many, and I say the vast majority of the industry, have had and voiced with the current legislation that's being proposed in D.C., I understand the premise. I understand people want uniformity. But when you look at H.R. 1754 and then the recently introduced Senate Bill 1820, the economics don't add up. Jude said it earlier this morning. I think racing is going to always survive. But how do we look at that? How do we picture racing 5, 10, 15 years from now? Do we want to be like the international markets and to be a club and to be a sport? Recently, Joe Drape, in an article, made comment, and I'm taking a piece of his article, quote, "You know, it was the sport of kings for the reason they did it as a sportsman. They're not trying to live off the personal money, but that dynamic has changed." So what is that saying? That's saying that the people who are pushing this bill, the leadership at the Jockey Club, their partners in HSUS, and some others, I would say, continue to push this bill, and now the Senate introduced bill, to ultimately change the economic dynamic of the industry. So yes, Jude, racing is going to be around, racing will survive, but will it be a $36 billion economic impact? No. But apparently those who are pushing it, they don't care if it's an industry anymore. They just want their sport of kings back.
Okay, so we mentioned the bill, and there are people tuned in, I'm sure, that have no idea what we're referencing when we reference the bill and some of the things that are in that bill and what the bill is supposed to accomplish. So kind of lay out the details of that for me, Eric.
Absolutely. So the bill in its first iteration was 3084, and that was two Congresses back. And it was thoroughbred-centric. In May of 2017, they introduced a bill, 2651, and that bill became the Horse Racing Integrity Act. And for the first time of the several iterations of the bill, it actually included all breeds, I would say major racing breeds. So now you have the standardbreds, now you have the quarter horses also wrapped into that. And then just this year, it was introduced as 1754. So that's the House bill. The bill and its goal, while I would say most everybody is in favor of, that's uniformity. But how do they create uniformity in this bill? This bill duplicates a system that we already have in the United States. Now, that system is state-run. Every governor in the 34 jurisdictions that it's legal selects a racing commission. And that commission governs through the rules of the ARCI, the Association of Racing Commissioners International.
Yep.
But what concerns we have continued to voice really in the three main iterations of the bill focus mainly, in my opinion, around the economics, or I should say the lack of economic definitions within the bill. The other part that's very concerning to us is the bill sets up an entirely new group called HADA, Horse Racing Anti-Doping Agency. I'm certain a group that most people are aware of is USADA, the United States Anti-Doping Agency, which does testing on the Olympics, which is federally funded through USADA. And they do some what I would call minor professional sports. They do not do the NFL. They do not do MLB or NBA. But this group is put in charge with a board of seven members of their own, including their CEO, and then they pick six additional. Now, what's questionable about those six is the conflict of interest clause that you see very, very detailed and spelled out within the bill. Now, it actually defines that you cannot be a current stakeholder and be on this committee, this new HADA board. That's not the end of the world. Commissions are independent. There are sometimes commissioners that are selected that ultimately get put on a board or put on the racing commission. But when you look at the way commissions are set up now and through the model rules, the stakeholders have input into what is model rule shaping under the ARCI. So this board is completely independent. Not elected, which again is a problem for many HBPA members because, again, we are the horseman's group and we are elected. None of these other acronyms that you have out there run in a democratic fashion. You don't pay dues to be an HBPA member. So with this independent board that's put in charge, you're now going to answer to the Federal Trade Commission. A lot of us kind of scratch our head. I've met with the Federal Trade Commission representatives on two different occasions now. And certainly if you read the mission statement of the Federal Trade Commission, it is all about not monopolizing an industry. And that's exactly what this bill does.
So let me interrupt you for just a second. So if the members of the board of HADA, am I saying it correct? Okay. If the members of the board are not elected and they're appointed?
Correct.
Who appoints them?
The HADA, or the USDA, essentially. I'm sorry, the USADA, not the Department of Agriculture. But okay. USADA appoints the members.
Okay.
And that's how the board is set up.
Okay. So horse racing is completely out of that decision-making process.
By my interpretation, yes. Essentially, the board. I will preface and say that the bill certainly outlines the ability to have committees with stakeholders. So, but again, there is no representative that is put in place on that board that is chosen by the stakeholders at this point.
Okay. Eric Hamelback, he is the CEO of the National HBPA. He is with us in our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios here this morning, laying out the details of what's happening on the legislative side of things in Washington. And if you can't tell, there is an awful lot involved with this situation, a lot of different elements involved in a lot of different ways that you can break this down. And Eric, you're doing a great job of spelling things out for people. So from the HBPA perspective, you talked about some of the things, and of course, it's no secret that the HBPA, the Jockey Club, are at odds quite often about this issue. You look at it as coming to it from one angle. They come at it from a different angle. Is there any opportunity to find common ground for the good of the industry from their side and from your side?
Absolutely. I think there is. But I want to give one analogy that comes back to what I often say as the majority. So you hear quite frequently now this notion, everybody get in a room and lock the door until we come out with a solution. So I'm going to basically tell you, as I told the Kentucky Thoroughbred Farm Managers Club a few weeks back, that's happened. And the reality is, in December of 2016, the ARCI, their president, Ed Martin, who again opposes the legislation that we've been dealing with, they hosted it. December 2016, at the ARCI, at the Omni in Arizona. And I would say, anecdotally, there were 70 people in the room, but at the end of the day, without a head count, every breed was there. Every veterinary veterinary leadership was there. And there was one group that wanted to move this federal bill. One group out of the entire section. And that was the leadership of the Jockey Club. And so my point of reference is really just to say, when does majority not rule anymore? And I think, again, if you just look at what we see in the opposition, it's not an opposition to uniformity. The reality is, it's not even an opposition to a governing body. It's an opposition to an unfair representation underneath the federal government, which, by the way, there's no proof that we need federal intervention. That, to me, says it all. And then to look very specifically at another analogy that we're continuing to look at is my friend Sid Fernando wrote an amazing article that outlines a point that we have been referencing all along. This bill is very likely unconstitutional, period. If you look at PASPA, you look at the Professional Amateur Sports Protection Act, and it being repealed by the Supreme Court. Why? Because it was telling the states what to do. That's exactly what H.R. currently 1754 and now Senate Bill 1820 are doing.
Yep.
So I see, if enacted, there's going to be lawsuit after lawsuit. And where does that get us? That gets us more in the hole and puts us through a litigious exercise that really we don't need to go down. What we need to be doing is, and I invite anybody to go to lobby.gov and start looking at how much money is spent on lobbyists in D.C. The number is shocking, Mike. It's actually shocking when you think, if we want to improve the breed, what could we do with some extra money? Oh, I don't know. Why don't we put up some grant funding for those commissions like I referenced so that they could get a third-party veterinarian to do Lasix? I don't know. Why don't we pay for scoping of every horse that comes off the racetrack and actually start studying EIPH instead of trying to say Lasix is the end-all to be-all? You know, those are the kind of things that we need to be spending money on. We have a process in place right now that we could walk over to the Department of Agriculture, look to the NVSL, who basically runs the uniformity of laboratories for every species but us, and develop uniformity of the laboratories. I know I've talked to several people, and I continue to explain that what I think the problem is in our lack of uniformity boils down to laboratory non-uniformity. And why is that? Because they don't have a standard that's been set for them to stop at. In other words, a screening limit or a threshold. And so ultimately, if we had an opportunity to get all of the labs on the same page, which can be done through the ARCI, I think you would see uniformity across the board.
All right, hold that thought. Visiting with Eric Hamelback, who is the CEO of the National HPPA. When we come back, Eric, I'm going to ask you, if you're the commissioner of horse racing, provide me with a solution that, in your opinion, you feel would work to get everybody on the same page. We'll do that when we come back. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Breeders' Cup.
Adina Spring Stallion, Point of Entry.
Point of Entry scores.
A five-time Grade 1 winner, viewed by many to be the heir to Dynaformer's global legacy.
And here comes Point of Entry, who's running to daylight.
The first horse since Theatrical to win the New York Turf Triple Crown, accomplishing the feat by a combined nine lengths.
And Point of Entry will go to the Breeders' Cup on a 5-race winning streak.
Hailing from a remarkable female family, with his first 4 dams grade 1 winners or grade 1 producers, Point of Entry is your entry point to the Kentucky Derby.
Paku Parfait in front of Paku Parfait takes it out. Paku Parfait takes out the Derby.
Luska Parfait recently became his sire's newest graded stakes winner with a game victory in the $2.5 million UAE Derby, securing his spot in the Kentucky Derby. The heir to Dynaformer and the next global sire is Point of Entry. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
Kentucky Derby winner Orb. On the track, his runners have scored on both dirt and turf, including multiple stakes winner Autumn Warrior and Sipican Harbor winner of the Grade 1 Spinaway Stakes at Saratoga. On the track, Orb continues to add winners. And in the sales ring, his two-year-olds have sold up to $250,000 in 2019. Classic winner, classic pedigree, Orb, standing at Claiborne Farm.
The National HBPA is a coalition of over 30 individual affiliates in the United States and Canada, comprised of thousands of thoroughbred owners, trainers, and breeders, committed to the positive future of thoroughbred racing while working to increase its popularity and uphold the highest standards of welfare and integrity. Stop by to visit CEO Eric Hamelback at the National HBPA headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky, and see what the HBPA is doing for you.
Fans, come on out to Santa Anita this weekend for world-class racing and much more. Spread the news. We'll have a mandatory payout in Sunday's 20-cent single-ticket Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot with a pool that could approach $5 million. Be sure to bring Dad out on Sunday. It's Father's Day, and we've got brunch in the Front Runner and Turf Terrace, a trackside barbecue, and club court packages. And don't forget, we could have $5 million up for grabs this Sunday. Santa Anita. Great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Alternation, sire of Serengeti Empress, winner of this year's Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks.
Serengeti Empress, who's holding off the challenge of Leora as they come down to the line. Serengeti Empress has taken the Kentucky Oaks.
Alternation is one of 4 third crop Kentucky sires to produce a Grade 1 stakes winner. And from his first 2 crops, his runners have earned nearly $4.5 million with 9 black type horses and 5 black type winners. Alternation, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Hi, I'm Kieran McLaughlin. I'm so hot at this meet because I listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Continuing our conversation with the CEO of the National HBPA, Eric Hamelback, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. He did a great job spelling out the bill and some of the different organizations, so many acronyms to keep track of in the first segment of this interview. Now we have about 6 minutes or so left before we have to get to our final break. So, Eric, I'm going to ask you, I said this before the break, but we don't have a commissioner. And right, in an ideal world, I guess that would be the logical solution, but we'll get your thoughts on that here in a second. But if you're the commissioner of horse racing, or you're in charge and you could have the power to make all of the different decisions, how would you approach uniformity, and what would be the proper play to get everybody on the same page?
Well, that's a great question, Mike. Thank you. So there's a lot of that's a multifactorial question. That's a great word right now. But I would first just address the word commissioner, because there are a lot of folks in the industry that look to where or how a commission can be developed, and they often compare it to the NFL or the NBA. And I would just like to remind people, the limited number of teams/owners in the NFL and the NBA. When you look at the NFL and they have 32 owners or owner groups with one vote, it makes it a little easier to have one person represent the entire group. We'd have 30, 35 owners on one day, one race card. So that makes it almost impossible, in my opinion, to develop a true singular commission and commissioner for horse racing.
Yeah.
And again, when you truly look at the state programs and you have executive directors of the commissions, we have a great one here in Mark Guilfoyle. You know, ultimately, every state is 100% uniform. And that says something. And so moving from state to state, while I think a commission or a commissioner makes some sense when you think about it in the 30,000 foot view, I always say Frank Stronach always gave us ideas on that 30,000 foot view, but I'm the guy on the ground at the 1 foot that has to put it into play. And that's a difficult ask, logistics alone. Having said that, I think that, and I have proposed, and I've talked to some congressmen about that, and even congresswomen now in from California, and I mentioned it briefly, but when you look at the Department of Agriculture, the United States Department of Agriculture, and you look at the what we have in place now, and you look at the different councils that they have for the different species other than equine, I think it's very logical that there is a way to develop, and I kind of threw out NVSL just a second ago, and again, an acronym that I would say 90% of you may not realize, but that's the National Veterinary Services Laboratory. Right now in the USDA, the only two equine testing that they monitor very closely on a stringent basis, paraplasmosis and EIA, so Coggins testing. But it doesn't mean that they can't expand that into other medications. And ultimately, what I've written is a prospectus that could possibly look at, and I would say through a federal bill if necessary, you set up the racing commissions, and then under the USDA and the NVSL, you've set up, and I've set up, a process to which those factors and uniformity for medication and testing can be implemented. I've even gone as so far as to develop a checkoff system, a true checkoff system that would be mandated. And it's not just breeders and owners that are paying for it. Everybody that touches the racehorse, from owners, breeders, ADWs, track, anybody and everybody, if you want to pay for horse racing integrity, then you're going to have to pay to play. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the realism. And ultimately, you know, in my world, which I think very much like a whiteboard, I've set up a horse racing assembly of representatives. And in that, you basically have the commissions that are your vote. So now we're back to 34. And the representatives from those commissions then can get input from stakeholders within their commission, and they have then they have the right to vote for that jurisdiction. So I think it's very possible. It's a little bit out of the box. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't still need federal implementation to get set forth. But I think if we continue to look at veterinary leadership and the commissions that we have now and your true horseman's representative, it's feasible.
All right, he's Eric Hamelback, the CEO of the National HPPA. Eric, believe it or not, you finished with about 1 minute left here before I have to get to the break, so I'm going to throw this at you. The poll question for today. We're shifting gears completely. The best Father's Day gift that you have ever received, with, of course, tomorrow being Father's Day.
Well, boy, that's a tough one. Seeing my young adults, my son's now 19 and my daughter's 16, just walking down the stairs every day is an amazing Father's Day. But I have to go to my passion. Well, two passions. One, Deborah bought me a really, really nice fly rod a few years back. And then back during my, semi-professional polo days, she bought me a set of custom leather boots from Polo Gear in Florida. And, I just wore the hell out of them. But thank you. That's a great way to end it. Appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being with us today, my friend. And like all of our guests, we'll send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You're wearing your LSU-colored Embrace the Race cap right now. So
thanks to Mike and Jill for that special present. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, well done, brother. Happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day to you guys.
All right, Eric Hamelback here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We do have one final break to get to. We will do that right now. We'll come back and wrap it up. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
record prize money for horsemen, and great racing. Highlight the 145th Spring Meet at Churchill Downs. Churchill will be offering more than $30 million in total purses, an increase of nearly $8 million over 2018, with $12 million in stakes purses and $18 million in overnight races. Maiden races during the Spring Meet will be worth $85,000, up from $53,000 last year, and allowance purses will range from $87,000 to $94,000. Record prize money and great racing this spring at Churchill Downs.
Springtime tips and fun facts from Paul, Kristen, and Dexter at Total Wine & More.
Did you know there were over 1 million bubbles in a glass of champagne? Did someone say brunch?
Wine is made in virtually every country in the world, and I'm ready to give you a tour to find the right one.
Ham's sweet and salty richness pairs perfectly with a juicy Pinot Noir.
Now with two locations in Lexington. Visit our newest store in Hamburg, off Sir Barton Way. Shop online at TotalWine.com. The selection is ridiculous. Cheers!
Airdrie Studs Summer Front is poised to skyrocket to national sire prominence with his first crop of two-year-olds in 2019. A multiple stakes winner at two, this talented son of Warfront went on to win her place in 12 graded stakes with lifetime earnings of more than $1 million. With an explosive turn of foot, Summer Front routinely recorded times of a mile and 33 in some of the best grade one mile races in the country and possesses everything it takes to be an important sire for years to come. Airdrie Studs Summer Front. Think about it.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
Power.
Here's the wire, and it's a photo finish that goes to Tonalist.
Passion.
It was creator and destined right on the wire, and Irad Ortiz raised his whip in victory.
Performance.
Taprit and Irish Warcry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Gainsway Stallion Tappet is America's most dominant sire and has emerged as one of the most influential and breed-shaping stallions of the past half century. Among his 25 career Grade 1 winners are three Belmont Stakes champions, Tonalist, Creator, and Tappet. So far in 2019, Tappet has produced 18 stakes winners and 8 graded stakes winners. And in the sales ring, Tappet is the sire of 26 yearlings to bring $1 million or more at auction. Tappet, standing at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
This is Wesley Ward. I'm the conqueror of Royal Ascot. I listen to HRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, wrapping up this 2 hours here this morning. Hope you enjoyed the program. Don't forget, we're back tonight, SiriusXM 156. You can join Tom Leach and the Pontiff of the Big Four, Jude Feld, live from Churchill Downs for coverage of the Stephen Foster, the Fleur-de-Lis, and a couple of other really good stakes, too. I guess the Matt Wynn and the Wise Dan will be the other two you guys will have on that coverage.
Yeah, it's a great card. They did a terrific job putting it together, and come on out.
Yeah, it should be good. And if you can't make it out, make sure you're tuned in to us. Again, if you can't make it to a radio to listen on SiriusXM 156, you can tune in worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. You can do that on your phone, your computer. You can Bluetooth it in your car while you're driving around. Make sure you do that and you're locked in. 8 to 10 Eastern time tonight. We did throw out the poll question this morning. Eric gave you his thoughts on it in the last segment, but the best Father's Day gift you ever received, a couple of great answers, too. And, you know, look, it's not always about the material thing, certainly. One reply, anything from my two girls makes it a special Father's Day, as I'm privileged to be a dad to them every day. Really nice stuff there. And then the second answer here, my first Father's Day, kind of. My wife surprised me on Father's Day with the news that she was pregnant with my firstborn son, the best gift a dad can get. Really cool stuff. Thanks for weighing in, guys. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah. That's a great answer.
Yeah, and a happy Father's Day to all the dads throughout HR Nation, and to you too, JT.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Very blessed.
So, as of 8 o'clock, you'll be on the air tonight at Churchill Downs. The race you're looking forward to most on that card tonight, which is an outstanding program.
Ooh, I'm looking forward to the Fleur-de-Lis, but I think the Stephen Foster is probably the... big race anyway, but, you know.
We talked earlier about Elate and the Fleur-de-Lis. That this is an important race for her. She needs to get back to being the Elate that we were used to seeing back early to mid-2018. In the Stephen Foster, it's a big race for a lot of horses in there, too, not just because of the win in there, you're in for the Classic, but that division right now is kind of up for grabs.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a nice division. There's a lot of nice horses, so they're going to sort themselves out a little bit today.
Well, we're going to find out later on tonight at Churchill. Our thanks to Breeders' Cup for making that coverage possible as we continue down the road to the Breeders' Cup as your exclusive home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Our thanks to Ed DeRosa and Al Stahl Jr. for being with us in the first half of the show. David McCaffrey and Eric Hamill back in the second half. If you missed any portion, go to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure. You can also do that, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Now for our producer, Lee Della Pina, for Chauncey, Sean C., handling all of our social media. For Jude Feld, I'm Mike Pennell. We'll talk to you next week on HRN. Go Steelers, go Phil.
Good night, Barbados.